South Dakota lawmakers passed a $4.3 billion budget late Friday night. Despite lower-than-expected revenue projections, the budget provides for increases in Medicaid reimbursements, state employee salaries, and education funding. Lawmakers also passed a bill that increases funding for roads and bridges. It raises the gas tax by 6 cents and raises license fees and license plate fees by 20%. Lawmakers return to Pierre one more day on Monday, March 30th, to consider any gubernatorial vetoes. Yesterday, we spoke with Senate Minority Leader Billy Sutton about the 2015 legislative session. Today, we're joined by House Speaker Pro Tem Representative Mark Mickelson. And Representative Mickelson, thanks for joining the program as a last-minute substitute for Senator Tim Rave.
You're welcome. Glad to be with you.
Well, looking at the beginning of the session, I'm wondering if this session, the 2015 session, kind of went the way you might have thought it did when you convened in January?
Well, there's always surprises, but no, I thought it was a great session. And being in South Dakota, you know, the first thing you have to comment on is the weather in Pierre was fantastic this winter. And I think that contributed to everyone being in a pretty good mood. It was unseasonably warm. It wasn't windy, and the sun was shining. And I'm in the House. I'm the Speaker Pro Tem, the Assistant Speaker in the House. We have 58 Republicans in our caucus, 70 members in the House, and really a hallmark of term limits, four terms, 8 years, is there's always a lot of freshmen. And I think we had 26, 27, 28 freshmen in the class, first-time lawmakers. Now, fortunately, we had four, five, or six of those that had come back who were really seasoned legislators, but it was a really strong group of freshmen, and by and large, they hit the ground running, and so I feel like we had a very productive legislative session. We worked together well. Of course, there's different sides of an issue, but when the time for those differences passed, we came together, and frankly, we moved forward on some important initiatives for the state of South Dakota. So, you know, I left Pierre in a really good mood, feeling like we got a few things done that needed to be addressed.
Looking at those things, those initiatives, what do you see as being the biggest accomplishments during this 2015 session?
Well, for the state of South Dakota, you know, the governor decided to spend some well-earned political capital on addressing probably the most basic function of government. All of us can hearken back to, you know, four generations ago or so when we settled this area, and roads, bridges, railroads, transportation infrastructure. We live a long way away from the large markets. We produce, you know, our most basic industries, agriculture and soil, and it's expensive to move our most basic natural resource to a market. And I'm surprised we don't have a little bit better of a local market, but we're working on some things in that area. But the highway bill, I think what folks have been hearing is the highway bill. We are addressing a need, and we're addressing the most basic function of government. And we waited until the last day to do it, but and there was some concern from some that maybe we wouldn't get anything done, but we did. We got it done. There's more money for counties on roads and bridges, and then the state trunk system, 7,800 miles, I think it is. It kind of crisscrosses the state. And we did add another 6 cents to the fuel tax. We were at 22 cents, I think, and that raises us to 28, maybe 21, raising us to 27. Iowa raised theirs 10 cents, so they're above us. Nebraska raised theirs 6 cents. They remain above us. And Minnesota, no surprise to those who might be listening, they're trying to raise theirs, but even if they don't, they'll still be above where we went to. So from a competition standpoint for our petroleum retailers, we took a measured approach, but we did address an area of significant need.
How difficult is it for you and you as a lawmaker and the other legislators to consider a bill that raises taxes and fees?
Well, politically, it's never popular. No one likes to pay more for anything. But because it's a basic function of government, because people understand how critical it is. And frankly, I think people can see the need. You know, they realize and recognize how important it is. And, you know, the fortunate thing about a gas tax is even some of the groups that are, you know, hardline, no new taxes, look at the fuel tax as a, I don't know if the term's user fee or whatever, but they're not against those kinds of things because we're paying to improve the road system, and the people paying for it are the people that use it. So kind of, I think most people think that probably makes sense.
Do you think that the final bill adequately takes care of all the problems with transportation infrastructure in South Dakota? Or do you think there's some holes there that maybe still need to be filled, I guess?
Well, we started out with a proposal that would have solved every foreseeable issue for a long, long, long period of time. And this bill didn't do that. I think the legislature backed up and said, listen, let's address the need that we can see in the near term. And so I think the bill does that. So I'm pretty comfortable with the package that we passed.
Now, looking at the final budget that was passed on Friday, given that there was there were lower than expected revenue projections, was that a difficult task then, coming up with that final budget?
Well, we have a great team of appropriators and great leadership on our appropriations committee and a lot of experience. And so that's what happens in a budget. It happens in a household budget. Happens in a business's budget. We'd projected revenue of X, and it, you know, it came in a tenth of a percent different. And I tell you what it did do is it served as a pretty good reminder to those of us in Pierre and those of you paying attention is how important agriculture is to our state. Most of the downturn in the revenue was related to a lower sales tax collected on the sale of agriculture equipment, which is just a reflection of commodity prices. And there's just a little bit less buying, or quite a bit less buying going on at the family farm, understandably. And so revenues came in a little soft, still up, but they weren't up the 4.5% that we'd expected. They were up between 1.5% and 2%. And so we have had lower utilization on a number of our recipient programs in the Department of Social Services. Unfortunately, enrollment at our tech schools is down from what we would want it to be and what we would hope it would be, so they found some money there. And then I think the state employee pay plan was a 2% across-the-board increase, and then there's a movement to job worth in addition. And I believe that movement to job worth was lowered a little bit, just so that we could make sure that the state budget balanced, and we left here with the budget balancing.
In looking at some of the issues, particularly from the Democratic side of the aisle regarding teacher pay, teacher shortages, those education issues, what do you see as the future there with those issues? Do you think those are still issues that need to be addressed by lawmakers?
Teacher pay is an issue that I feel needs to be addressed. Teacher shortages may be a function of teacher pay. Most of the good people I know that went into teaching didn't do it for the money. But living in the southeastern corner of the state, we do have competition with pay programs in neighboring states, and so we need to be cognizant of that. I'm aware that we fund, our schools are funded 39th in the country, but we do pay 50th or 51st. And I'm aware that most of that is explained by our, by what I'll call our sparsity. You know, we have a very low student-teacher ratio. Some of that's special ed driven, frankly, and some of that's sparsity. But yet at the same time, I do know that the state's contribution to K-12 is 50th, and we fund our education with state funds and local funds and some federal funds, but it's the local property tax and the state general fund and then the state sales tax, a portion of the state sales tax and video lottery that goes into funding education. And so it's a fundamental building block of government, a free, quality public education. We can't forget that. It's in our state's constitution, but I think most people view it as a core function. Right after infrastructure comes education. And that's what gives everyone an equal opportunity to be successful in life. And we do a good job in South Dakota. Now, you know, I've got three kids in the public school system, and our reading scores, I think the word's NAEP. As a state, we used to be a top 10 state. We're not. We're in the bottom half now. I don't know why that is, but I think funding and teacher pay are certainly part of that conversation. Limited state budget, a lot of hands out looking for it, but I'm hopeful that there are going to be some changes in some of the Department of Social Services needs on the state budget that may free up some resources that other folks may or may not deem as suitable for looking at education.
You're listening to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking about the 2015 legislative session, which essentially wrapped up on Friday. Lawmakers will return to consider any gubernatorial vetoes later this month. We're joined by House Speaker Pro Tem Republican Mark Mickelson. Yesterday, I spoke with Senate Minority Leader Billy Sutton, and he mentioned what he perceived as something of a dysfunction between the House and Senate. From your perspective, do you think there was a little bit of a dysfunction between the two chambers?
You know, I didn't see it. The House leadership worked together well. You know, you end up with a lot of strong personalities and egos, and there's a lot of different cooks in the kitchen anytime you get in the legislative process. And near the end of session, tempers can flare, can get short. I didn't see a lot of that. Now, I'm the assistant speaker, the speaker pro tem, the speaker in training, so to speak. That's considered to be kind of more the nonpartisan side of leadership in the House. So Senator Sutton may be aware of some things that I didn't see, but we did get done what needed to get done. And personally, speaking for myself and what I saw, I thought by and large we worked pretty well together.
Now, you mentioned we talked about the transportation funding measure that was passed. Other big accomplishments that you see, major accomplishments during the session this year?
Well, I think the juvenile justice bill just needs to be talked about, and you know, who knows what that means, but we've had a policy in this state of when a kid violates the law, gets caught with pot one too many times, we'll send them a long, long way away. We have a youth camp in Custer, and it removes kids from their support network, their family, and their job, and their school, and they might pick up some more bad habits. And so the ideas behind the juvenile justice bill, which was really capably led by the governor's staff and a gentleman by the name of Jim Seward, said, listen, we're going to invest some state resources in some additional treatment programs and local enforcement mechanisms in a community, with the idea that that's going to free up a greater amount of resources in the Department of Corrections. So it's not only a better public investment, but it's better for the kids, you know, because people feel better when they're actively engaged and they're productive in something. And so removing that kid from his job or what it is that motivates him can be destructive. I think that's a bill that needs to be talked about. And if I can, I'll just throw out a couple other issues. Mm-hmm. One is, workforce development and labor force and job growth is probably the number two drag on sales tax collection. We are having a very difficult time growing our labor force. I personally think that our four post-secondary technical institutes are the backbone of keeping kids engaged in the workforce and getting them trained for the workforce. We had a successful session, not so much on the funding, but on how they're governed. And for those that pay a lot of attention to the tech schools, they reside inside of their local K-12 school district, but they're entirely funded by the state, okay? And we did broker, and I was involved in this. I was able to broker an agreement between the Board of Regents and the tech schools, which doesn't happen very often. They view themselves as competing for the same scarce resource, high school graduates. And what the agreement was is the Board of Regents have agreed that they will not assert jurisdiction, won't attempt to take control of our technical institutes, and we're going to do that via a constitution, an amendment to the state constitution, because there's some language in the state constitution that was concerning to the technical institutes. And so that constitutional amendment, it got through the legislature with just one no vote. And I'd like to thank Jack Warner and the Board of Regents for working with us on that. And it'll go on the ballot November of 2016. So it's going to be one of those issues where your friends are going to call you and say, hey, what's this issue and what's that mean? And hopefully the citizens will support the constitutional amendment. And that, I think, will allow the tech institutes to consider moving forward, if they choose to, in a governance structure that better aligns how they're funded, what their mission is, and then who oversees them. So that was one other issue. And, I've been talking a lot. If you got any other questions, there's one other issue I'd touch on if you have time for it.
Yeah, we have time for that.
Okay. We fundamentally, our state's at its very core is an agriculture state. And it's what we export that brings dollars in. Those of us that aren't in agriculture frequently serve those that are in agriculture or serve those that serve agriculture. My business, I serve a lot of railroads. That happens to be, I have a finance business that is, my core group of customer is railroads. And in South Dakota, agriculture is the core customer of the railroads. We have not embraced, in this state to date, livestock to the extent it's embraced in states around us. And what that has led to is, we export half of our grain. We take a 60-cent discount at the elevator, it's called basis, to ship that grain out of here into a market. And you can look at the neighboring states around us, and I'll just point out to Iowa, for example. Iowa has three times the corn crop that we have, but they don't export any grain. They import grain. Now, there happens to be significantly more livestock on feed in Iowa and in Nebraska and in Minnesota than there is in South Dakota. And for years and years and years, since ethanol's gotten big, we probably haven't had the excess feed for a long time. But now we do with modern crop genetics. And folks are legitimately concerned about, out-of-state interests and corporate interests. But when we throw the baby out with the bathwater on this issue, what we've done is we have kept the next generation of the family farm off the farm, because they're not needed in modern grain farming anymore. Machinery's taken over. And we had four folks come testify on a bill who had left the family farm because there wasn't room for them and got back on the family farm in Hand County, Beadle County, and McCook County because they were able to get into concentrated animal operations. And they're family farmers. And so there was a bill that granted counties and municipalities, but this issue is primarily for counties, the authority to change their rules if the county wants to, so it's still local control. And in order to approve a conditional use permit, current state law says two-thirds minimum vote. And the new rule would say if a county wants to, they can go with a simple majority of the members that want to go vote. And there's more inside that bill, and that's certainly a longer conversation than that. But, by and large, the Republican members of both sides of the caucus voted for it, even in some counties where it's where there's some pushback on this issue because they don't know, it's change. But, whether it's a dentist from Flandreau or an auto repair owner up in Big Stone City, the folks decided to vote for it because they see what's happening to the main streets of these communities, and they understand what the job creation and the economic development potential could be if a county wants to be attached to that issue. And so that was we had what I'll call a small step forward. It was a pretty light tread, but it's certainly a conversation worth having, and there are reasonable people can disagree, but it's something we need to be talking about with all this grain being shipped out of state in the state of South Dakota.
All right. Well, Representative Mickelson, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for agreeing to talk with us on Dakota Midday at the last minute.
You bet. Thanks for having me.